You're listening to the Automation Solution Podcast, where we provide innovative, value-added, smart technology solutions that automate and optimize manufacturing processes for customers seeking excellence. Regardless of your role, we'll share valuable solutions for you to apply within your area of responsibility. And now, your host, Director of Business Development for Robex, Craig Francisco.
Hey, everybody, it's Craig Francisco, your host for the Automation Solution Podcast. Thank you for joining us. This is episode number one. We're excited. We're excited that we've lined up some phenomenal people that we're going to be interviewing here over the coming year. We believe that automation in general is changing the shape of U.S. manufacturing. So we want to make sure that we're asking the right questions to the right people and bringing you as much valuable information as we possibly can. So episode number one, we went out, we found Dr. Robert Atkinson. He is one of the country's foremost thinkers on innovation economics. He's conducted groundbreaking research on technology and innovation, and he's authored three books, including Big is Beautiful, Debunking the Mythology of Small Business. As founder and president of the Information Technology and Innovation Foundation, otherwise known as ITIF, he's recognized as the world's top think tank for science and technology policy. Atkinson leads a prolific team of policy analysts and fellows that successfully shape the debate and setting the agenda on a host of critical issues at the intersection of technological innovation and public policy. So today we're going to go deep with questions such as, you know, what does he believe automation will do to the long-term success of U.S. manufacturing? How will AI affect the evolution of automation? Does he believe that automation will negatively affect the job market? And we'll talk a little bit about collaborative robots. It's a hot topic out there right now. Everybody has interest and is curious to know what these are going to do to the ability to automate new, you know, processes that in the past were never possible. So without further ado, let's get into the interview. Thank you for being here. If you like the episode, share it with your friends. We're going to continue bringing you as much value as possible. Thanks so much. Here we go. So Rob, welcome to our Automation Solution Podcast. We're very thankful you're taking the time out to shed some light on, you know, automation as it relates to U.S. manufacturing and really to get your point of view on several what we believe to be key items.
Craig, thanks for having me.
You bet. I mean, your credentials, you know, really speak for themselves, Rob. And this podcast we have created, it's really going to be targeted towards those in manufacturing, all the way from the C-suite level down to production floor. We believe that, you know, a lot of engineers, managers, directors, we're really going to get a lot out of this. So, you know, having you as our very first guest is really a thrilling, exciting day for us here at Robex. And our goal is to take as much value as we can and share it with all the listeners. So, without any further ado, if it's okay with you, I'd like to get started and ask you a few questions.
Absolutely.
All right. So I'm going to give you the easy one first, if there is such a thing. What role, in your opinion, professional opinion, Rob, will automation play in the long-term success of U.S. manufacturing? And I know it's not easy. I was joking, yeah.
No, I think that's really that's probably one of the most critical things that manufacturing can do. I mean, we've got if you're a manufacturer, you can gain market share and competitive advantage really by two things. One is, you know, differentiating your product offering, but the other is to compete on the ability of cost and to some extent quality, as automation can be positively related to quality as well. And you know, this is certainly super important to do for a couple of reasons. One is you look at places now that manufacturers can locate if they want, or where we're getting competition from, and, you know, and it's places where the labor costs are sometimes a tenth of what we pay in the U.S.
Right.
So if you want to be a competitive manufacturer and be in the U.S., automation has to be a core part of the strategy to be able to compete going forward. You look at some of the countries that have done well in manufacturing, some of the leaders, and I'd put Germany in that category. You know, Germans have done a pretty good job of automation and using technology. I once was on a plane ride coming back from Delhi in India, and I happened to luckily be in business class for that long ride. And I was talking to the person next to me. I said, "What do you do?" And he goes, "I'm an engineer for a German company, and they made ball bearings." It turns out they're like one of the biggest, sort of like Timken, but the German model. And I said, "Oh, so you're over in India because you're offshoring all your work there?" And he goes, "Oh, no, we'd never offshore we make sort of a small runs there for like old cars where you only need, you know, 1,000 a year or something like that. We have all of our production in Germany, and it's incredibly automated, and it's so automated we need really highly skilled technicians and engineers to manage it all, but that's how we're able to stay competitive." And I think that's really the model going forward.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense, Rob. And I'm able with my job, I'm out around the U.S. and Mexico and Canada quite often, so I'm in and out of different manufacturing plants, and I'm still amazed how little or how few folks have implemented any automation at this time. I don't know if that's something that you've seen or what the trend is. I know people are asking more questions, and now that, you know, it's not just industrial robots where people like myself may have just thought automotive is where that plays. Really, I think automation, in my opinion, and I'd like to hear yours, is that it really has a place in many different manufacturing facilities now.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've got lots of different, you know, obviously robots being the most important one or the one people talk about, but you know the whole issue of machine learning. You know, we were in a company a while back in Italy where all the employees wear iPhone watches, and or the technicians on the floor, and they're able to determine in real time essentially if a machine is off out of its specs. Whereas before, what they did is they would go around each machine at the end of every 8-hour shift, and then they'd record that on paper. And it turns out, you know, maybe you're running 2 or 3 hours where you're out of spec, and that was a huge problem. Now they know it in real time because they're using sensors and analytics and the like. So that's a really, you know, it's just that there's a broad array of technologies now that are able to be put to bear, put to, you know, to use in manufacturing, and not just robots. So I think it's super important. You know, one of the sort of depressing things, if you will, is if you look at the last approximately 10 years and you look at the labor productivity of U.S. manufacturing, for the first time, and I would say probably in American history, labor productivity growth of manufacturing in the U.S. is less than labor productivity growth of the rest of the economy. And you know, that never happened before. I mean, manufacturing was always getting more productive because it was, you know, it was easier to automate manufacturing than a barbershop or something like that.
Right. So, exactly.
Yeah. So you know, I think manufacturers have not, you know, maybe it's partly the technology wasn't ready and now it's more ready. Maybe it's laziness or lack of wanting to put the CapEx in or whatever it might be. But it's troubling, and we've got to turn that around pretty quickly, I believe.
No, I agree, and I think it's more affordable now, and that's part of it. What I've been talking to potential customers is that in their minds, they're thinking 10 years ago, and they didn't have those options. And a lot of that technology today, just like you said, even the iPhone or the iWatch, it's affordable solution that can do many things to help productivity.
Yeah, and just, you know, you just look at robotics, for example. We had a really great event on robotics and why the government, federal government, should be supporting robotics up at the Senate recently. And there were a number of robot companies on the panel. And, you know, one of the points that they made, and obviously you just made, is, you know, robots themselves are a lot cheaper than they were 10 years ago.
Right.
And you also have, you know, the ability to program robots is much easier. You know, you have some robots that you program by just moving them to where you want them to move, and they learn that. You don't need as many complex computer scientists or engineers to do this, and they're cheaper, they're more flexible. So, I do think that we're in a new era, essentially, of what people call smart manufacturing, and it's just, you know, just beginning to take off. But, you know, you don't want to be late to the party, would be my argument.
Right. Yeah, and I think just to kind of recap that first question, and, you know, hearing you correctly, my belief as well is this, I believe if the manufacturers aren't starting to embrace automation and trying to figure out where it can play within their facility or whatever it is, the product that they're manufacturing, it's going to be harder for them to be competitive, to make money, to sustain long-term growth, because the competition is going to be doing it. You think that's a fair statement?
Oh, totally. Totally, totally, totally. And the other thing is, you know, there are a lot of countries where if you look at there's a report, a report we issued last year where we looked at industrial or manufacturing robot adoption as a share of the world. So how many robots do you have as a share of your manufacturing workers in each country?
Right.
And, you know, the U.S. is sort of in the middle. Believe it or not, Korea's, you know, way at the top. But then what we did is we said, look, it makes a lot more sense to install a robot in the U.S. or Germany where the manufacturing wages are higher. So your ROI is faster
right.
than it is in, say, India, where you're you know, paying people 50 cents an hour, whatever it might be.
Right.
So if you then you look at that, the U.S. actually lags way behind. I mean, we're not investing in robotics in the U.S. anywhere near what our major competitors are doing. You know, China is actually ahead of us, really, when you think about it. And, you know, part of that is also because you have a bunch of countries now where the governments have made this a huge priority. And, you know, you go to Taiwan, for example, or Korea, you know, South Korea, you get big tax incentives for buying a robot
right.
or any kind of automation equipment. So we need to do more. Government needs to do more. Companies need to do more.
Now that's great. I think that's the government piece is a big part of it as well. So I appreciate you sharing that. Now, kind of second question that ties into this one and just my experience in the last couple decades. Typically, when people talk about automation or they talk about robots, and the folks that are uneducated and may not have implemented anything in their facilities, they have this fear that automation is going to equals replacing jobs. What's your take on that?
Well, I think it partly it depends on what industry you're in, but actually at a macro level, interesting studies, and there's a report on our website, itif.org, that we just issued called Robotics and the Future of Production and Work. And one of the things, when you look at the economic studies of this, what you find is that countries that adopt more robots in manufacturing actually don't lose manufacturing jobs relative to countries that don't. They sort of stay about the same. Now, why is that? It's not because the robots aren't effective in you know automating work. They are. It's that there's a second order effect of the companies and the industries gaining market share. So you can produce 10 widgets with, you know, 3 workers, and now you can do it with 2 workers, but you're selling 15 widgets now because you've automated.
Right.
And so you keep 3 workers. So now that's only true. That's also true more in industries where what economists call you know, elasticity of demand. So if you're in the car industry, for example, if you can reduce the price of cars, people are going to buy more cars.
Right.
But if you're in the, like, say, the funeral casket industry, it doesn't really matter if you lower the price of caskets.
Right.
You're not going to sell anymore. So, but
right.
in most industries, there is that. You know, you lower the price of furniture, people buy more furniture, and also, I don't think it's not as draconian as I think some people think. The second part of that too is you have a lot of companies now that are adopting robotics. I mean, BMW is a great example of that, where they adopted a lot more robotics, and it was partly they didn't lay anybody off, but they got two big benefits: is the quality went way up, so the error rates, the tolerances of everything went down, and so they improved their quality. But the second big thing that they did, partly by using cobots, where the worker and the robot work. The second big advantage they got is more flexibility. So if there's demand growing for this particular vehicle, they were able to, you know, instead of taking 3 months to retool to get that, they could respond much more flexibly and quickly, and therefore meet market demands. And so that's the other thing I think that's important. A lot of these new technologies, they allow for more flexible production. They allow for a broader array of things that you make. Instead of making one product with 5 different configurations, you could make them with 15 and not lose the efficiencies that you had before. So those, it's not just about, you know, reducing, you know, increasing raw efficiency and reducing headcount.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I was just in a facility a couple weeks ago out in New Jersey, and it was a plastic manufacturer, and they had about 12 people at the end of the line taking the finished goods product, putting them in boxes, conveying those further down the line, you know, taping the box, palletizing, stretch wrapping, and all of that was manual. So number one, you know, that from an ergonomic standpoint for employees, it's just not good for them. And
right.
You know, safety you have to worry about. And with the guy, the general manager told me, he's like, these folks I have here are so talented and can do so much more for our business to help us grow, yet we're handcuffed because we have to place them in this role because they don't have a solution. And I think that ties into what you said, is that if you can automate you know, certain aspects of your manufacturing process that allows you to take that talent, replace them, repurpose them, doing something of more value, there's also great gains that can be made there.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the point, you know, the point you raised, which is an important one, you know, there's a lot of misunderstanding about manufacturing, that it is all of, it's, you know, mostly those kind of jobs. And it's not. There's, you know, lots of manufacturing jobs are, they're non-repetitive. You have to use your mind as well as your body, you know, much less your body these days. And they're creative and complex and really interesting. But there are still, you know, very repetitive, kind of, you know, if you will, Charlie Chaplin, you know, jobs. Remember when he, in that old movie where he was.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Sort of the Fordist mass production. There are still jobs like that. And frankly, you know, they're just not very pleasant. And if you can automate those and then work to help your people move into something that's a little more interesting and complex and requires more human judgment and capabilities, you know, that to me is good for the workers as well as the company.
That's great. Great points. So as we talked about automation, we kind of have an idea now, or with your opinion, and I share the same reason with you as well, as the future. Talk about AI and the effects of, you know, artificial intelligence and what that evolution is going to do with automation.
Yeah. So there's a report that again we issued recently at ITIF. And it was looking at, we surveyed about, I don't know, maybe 60 or 70 companies that manufacturers, mostly mid-sized, kind of, you know, I don't know what you want to call mid-sized, but, you know, sort of a billion to 10 billion kind of thing. What we found, this is on our website, how AI will transform manufacturing and the workforce
yes.
in the future. And what we found was, first of all, that there's an enormous amount of potential for AI, because a lot of what manufacturing is somewhat repetitive. Some companies are making like, you know, like, for example, you look at a company like Lockheed where they make a satellite, they're making maybe 3 at a time kind of thing, you know.
Right.
But
right.
most manufacturers are making things where you're selling lots of them, and you're making them. And so there's a lot of data that's generated from that you can use then to improve the processes. So everything from using AI for what's called generative design. So, you know, in your CAD systems that you're using, you know, you can use AI to generate better designs than frankly just a human can on their own. Certainly things like machine maintenance, machine operations. So one of the interesting things about that is there definitely appears to be a lot of opportunity in AI in manufacturing. But what we found was, and it makes sense, what we found was that companies are at the very early stages of this. So we
right.
laid out a six phase evolution, if you will, the first two being digitization, where most companies are, computerization and connectivity.
Right.
You've got computers, you've got everything hooked up to the internet. The next four phases are what people call industry 4.0 or digital manufacturing. And the third phase is just seeing visibility. What's happening? What do you know in real time? And that means sensor-enabled processes everywhere, so that you can create a digital thread, you can see what's happening. The next phase four, would be transparency. So you can understand not only what's happening, but why it's happening. And you can also then integrate your shop floor level manufacturing execution systems with ERP systems and other systems like that. The fifth would be predictive. So you can predict failure. You can simulate alternative future scenarios. You know, one of the things that you look at, for example, what the Air Force has done with AI is they've been able to predict failures of certain parts in airplanes faster. The railroad industry is doing that as well. They've deployed cameras, and so as the train goes by, the freight train goes by, they in real time they take an image of the wheel, and then they use AI to determine, is there a crack in the wheel, or is that just a piece of dirt or a leaf or something like that? And they've been able to train it, so they're like really super accurate. And then when the train, you know, goes 100 miles or something to the nearest, next time it comes into a repair station, or they can then intervene ahead of some kind of failure, which could be quite catastrophic. So you see those sorts of, you know, that sort of evolution. The problem, though, or maybe not a problem, but when we looked at where companies are and we surveyed these companies, again, these are, you know, somewhat big companies. 22% were still in stage one, 22% were in stage two of connectivity, 38% were in the stage of visibility. So that's good, but really less than 10%. Nobody was at stage six, only 3% at stage five of being predictive. So there's a lot of,
right,
there's a lot of opportunity, analytics, digital twins is a good example, you know, where you run a digital model of what you're doing, and then you can tweak it and see how you can optimize performance. Again, to your point earlier, these 20 years ago or 10 years ago, you would have needed supercomputers and, you know, spend a lot of money, yeah, you know, your own your own giant server and all this. And, with the emergence of, cloud computing, with what it's going to be 5G in the factory, you know, so you can have, you know, incredibly fast and agile connections between all of your machines. They don't have to have a wire running to them now. I mean, that'll be here, you know, pretty soon, year or two from now. There's just all these new opportunities. I think that it's an exciting time in manufacturing. It's a new wave of opportunities, and I get why a lot of companies aren't there yet. You don't want to be so far out on the bleeding edge, but if you're not thinking about how you're going to make that journey, I think it's easy to get left behind.
I would agree, and I love your phases. I'll be sure to, what I'll do is I will link that article to this podcast so the listeners have easy access, because I do think that, you know, having been through multiple ERP conversions in my career, it's not as standard as you would think. There's a lot of companies that still don't have that type of system in place, and it's very difficult to jump to the next level or impossible without it. So it's that's great. And, you know, here at Robex, we're a FANUC integrator. You know, FANUC's our kind of first choice industrial robot, and they have software now where they're able to monitor all of the industrial robots that are out in the field at locations and help predict when that robot is going to go down. So and they're doing that for the customer on behalf. So it's fascinating, really, with that data, with that intelligence of what can be done to prevent, you know, failure, and then you've got production issues, obviously, and expenses that go along with that. So it's I think it's fairly remarkable.
You know, no, I totally agree, and that's only really the first stage. You know, I was visiting a really incredible company in Italy, and they make packaging equipment. And so, for example, if you look at a water bottle, you know, your Dasani water bottle, they're probably made the equipment that allows the water bottle company, the drinking water company, to make the bottle and the cap. And the cap, I watched the machine that makes the cap. It basically pours in plastic pellets at one end, and out on the other end, maybe 15 feet away, out come, I think, 1 million caps a day. with a 5-micron tolerance.
Wow.
But what's it, what I was talking to the engineer who leads that, and one of the things he said was really interesting, is that if their customers want it, I mean, they wouldn't do it unless because they can monitor performance all around the world with all their customers and then notify customers to say, you know what, your machines don't seem to be optimized compared to what everybody else is doing, and here's what you should do to make your machine better. So it's not just about repair and maintenance, it's about optimization. Now, there's some interesting issues there about, you know, who controls the data and proprietariness and all that stuff. But I think those things will all get worked out between companies. They'll figure out things that are win-win relationships. But
it's I agree.
Really amazing kind of things, you know, that you could move into that world now.
It is. It's very remarkable. And one thing that we're hearing a lot about as we talk to prospects and customers is the buzz, I guess you would say, that we're in robotics would be the cobot. You mentioned it earlier. So collaborative robots, we're hearing, you know, there's the leader really in the industry in the U.S. for sure is Universal at this point in time. And we were talking to some friends over there, and that, believe it or not, there is 163 different manufacturers now of collaborative robots, which I was kind of blindsided. I thought, you know, maybe there's a few dozen, but 163.
Yeah.
So that the market's growing. So what's your take on these collaborative robots? What are you hearing?
Yeah. So the event we did, as I mentioned before, up in the Senate recently, which is, again, is on our website. If any your listeners want to watch the video, it's a great video, but the president of Universal Robots was on the panel and was talking all about that. And actually he brought a robot. It was very cool. You know, there was a robot there people could sort of interact with. So I think, first of all, it's an important innovation in the sense of the old days, the robot was, you know, anything but collaborative. You know, it took forever to set it up. You bolted it in the floor and you don't want to get near it because it might kill you. And literally it has done that. Although it's luckily rare and few and far between. But these new ones are much more flexible. The worker and the robot work together to get better results than either alone. So I think it's very important. I guess I think, though, you want to pick the right tool for the right job. And there are some people who I think have gotten a little too enamored with collaborative robots and saying things like, well, collaborative robots are the solution to everything. I don't think that's true. There are going to be some applications where you just want a robot that, you know, puts things in a box and tapes the box up. But for certain things like that are more complex, where there's a little more variability or you need a little bit more precision or whatever, collaborative robots would be the right answer. So again, I think it's just looking at each particular application area and saying, what do I need and what's the best solution for it, as opposed to saying, I'm going to go all collaborative or all non-collaborative.
Yeah, what we're seeing too, Robin, that is that, you know, we conduct, so if we're going to integrate a collaborative robot at one of our customers' locations, we have to do a risk assessment. So there's lots of times that everybody or people think that, oh, we just need a collaborative robot in here, can pick this part, place this part, work next to the coworkers and no issues. But there's times when, you know, what's the tool look like? Is the tool safe? So we go through this assessment, and a lot of times we're finding out that it's not really a collaborative spot. Even though the speed is slow and the weight might be in line, I think for the listeners, you really need to understand what the collaborative application looks like versus just thinking you can have, you know, a robot that's open and not fenced in that's working alongside your employees.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm glad you do that, because that's super important to, you know, it's easy to sort of forget that. And then, you know, you can have certainly, you know, problems and safety issues with that if you don't, you know, so.
But yeah, there's great applications. We have a lot of fun with it. And there's the more I think you also have the mirrors, so the mobile autonomous robots that are out there now that I believe are, you know, are going to take hold here in the U.S. sooner than later. We talk a lot about it with our customers and moving product from point A to point B and it's doing it safely without tracks, without overhead, you know, wires. There's so much I think that we're going to see on that side of it as well. But again, it's making sure people are educated. They understand what the pros and cons are. They're working with somebody that's an integrator that's been there and done it before. That's, know, sometimes we see on the collaborative side, you know, manufacturers want to kind of do it themselves. And mm-hmm. there's some cases that can be done. But if it's not done right, you can cause, you know, again, major safety and then some financial lack of productivity and really not have it implemented the way it should be.
Yeah, yeah. And I know I also agree with you on the mobile robots. I mean, in Washington, D.C., at least for a while there, you would occasionally see a little robotic device wheeling down the sidewalk delivering restaurant meals.
Right.
And, you know, those are pretty cool. And doing it in a manufacturing environment is even, I think, a little easier in some ways because it's constrained and confined and repetitive. But yeah, I mean, why would people be moving, you know, apart from one place to the next if it's a repetitive, routinized thing?
Right.
You know, you can have a robotic autonomous device. That's the other component of this also that I think people need to understand. We wrote a broader sort of thought piece recently last year called The Task Ahead, Transforming the World with Connectivity, Automation, and Intelligence. And one of the key components of this is autonomous systems. These are, you know, everybody, when you hear that word, you think about cars, but no, it's these, you know, robotic devices in factories. Those are autonomous
right.
systems, and they're getting incredibly good now. So
they really are. They really are. Well, that's, hey, Rob, it's been a terrific time. Great interview. I know you're a busy man, and you really, I believe, have helped our listeners at least start to think and challenge themselves as they look at their manufacturing facility. You know, what have they automated? What's possible to implement? Because I believe if you're not getting better, you're going to get worse. There's no such thing as staying in the same position. So it's important that we keep bringing this value and this message to the U.S. manufacturers in hopes that everybody continues to move forward and embrace what's out there and not run away from it.
Yeah, and if I can just do one quick commercial.
Please do.
If not for ITIF, but rather there's I used to work a long time ago, first job of my career really, at the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST. It's part of the federal government's metrology lab, and they have a program now for many, many years called the Manufacturing Extension Partnership. And this group goes out and they do these sort of initial assessments for small and mid-sized manufacturers to get them sort of ready and understanding how, if I want to go and do automation, here's how I do it. And then firms like yours would come in after that and really help them do it. It's not like they would do all that for a firm, but they're really a great resource. And there's over 60 of these MEP centers all around the country. They're all staffed by manufacturing people, you know, the folks who've been engineers, and now they're not like just government bureaucrats who don't know anything about manufacturing.
Right.
Easy to find the resource. And so any of your listeners who are thinking about that, I think it's a good resource for manufacturing companies who are trying to figure out, how do I start this journey?
What's the website, Rob, for the listeners?
I think it's probably MEP.gov.
I'll do a little research. What I'll do is I'll put the link down in the summary here of the podcast so that our listeners, because I believe it's a great resource, and
yep.
I didn't know that was available. We'll make sure we share that.
Yeah, it's just NIST, so www.nist.gov. and then /MEP. And it has all the, you know, how do you contact, there's a link right here, connect with your local MEP center. So
MEP, perfect. And then if listeners want to get a hold of you, Rob, what's the best way?
So our website is ITIF.org. And my email is just ratkinson@ITIF.org.
All right, great. And I'll put that in there. Well, I really do appreciate your time, Rob. This was very insightful. Glad to have you on the podcast, and we'll look forward to talking to you again in the future.
Sounds great. Thanks, Craig, and best of luck on what you were doing.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Automation Solution Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe and give us a review. Also, please be sure to mention us to your industry colleagues. For more information on the solutions that Robex offers, check out our website at www.robex.us. Thanks again for listening, and until next time,